I call the meeting of the Wednesday, March 26th, 2025, House Veterans and Military Affairs Division to order. A quorum is present. We begin our meetings with the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. Representative Davis, could you lead us, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before we begin our agenda, I want to remind everybody that the division expects proper decorum at all time. All dialogue goes through the chair. Signs are not allowed in the committee room. There will be no outbursts or clapping. There is no standing or sitting in the walkways and aisles if accommodation is needed. Check with the sergeant staff. There will be consequences if there is a disruption. Thank you to the sergeant-at-arms staff who are present to help maintain decorum in the committee room. Representative Feist, have you had a chance to review the minutes? No pressure.
Yes, I have reviewed the minutes, and I move the minutes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Feist moves the approval of the March 19th, 2025 minutes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion carries, and the minutes of the March 19th, 2025 meeting are approved. The first bill on our agenda is House File 1042. Chair Mueller, please come to the testifier table with your testifier. And Chair Mueller, it is my understanding you would like to have this bill referred back to the Public Safety Committee. So since you are not a member of this division, I will move House File 1042 before the division with a recommendation it is referred to the Public Safety Committee. Please explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So a couple of years ago, we enacted a bill that allows for sexual assaults that occur between Guard members to be investigated by the BCA. And that has really helped with consistency of those investigation, particularly around assaults that may happen at Camp Ripley. The Sheriff's Association has brought forward this bill today to expand this to make sure that it includes all armed forces personnel. And this, again, will bring consistency to these investigations and ensures a standardized, impartial, and professional approach statewide. The Sheriff's Association did work with the National Guard, and we amended the bill in the Public Safety Committee, and the National Guard is also in support of the bill. They're here for any technical questions, but I do have one testifier, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and begin.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Scott Hable. I'm the sheriff in Renville County and the immediate past president of the Minnesota Sheriff's Association. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, first off, thank you so much for the opportunity to testify today on behalf of the Minnesota Sheriff's Association, as well as the 87 elected sheriffs of Minnesota in support of House File 1042. I also want to extend my thanks to Chair Mueller for authoring this important legislation. Sheriff Sean Larson, he's the sheriff in Morrison County. He intended to be here today as this bill has a direct impact on Morrison County, which is home to Camp Ripley, one of the nation's premier military training facilities. Unfortunately, Sheriff Larson and members of his office are attending a funeral for a family member today. Camp Ripley is a 53,000-acre regional training facility that serves not only the Minnesota National Guard, but also armed forces from across the country, including all branches of the military. Each year, more than 65,000 service members train at this elite facility. That's nearly double the population of Morrison County. The scale of activity at Camp Ripley underscores the critical need for clear, consistent, and effective processes for investigating allegations of criminal sexual conduct involving military personnel on state-owned military facilities. So the underlying law was established a few years ago. This legislation seeks to build upon that success by ensuring that allegations of criminal sexual conduct involving military personnel are investigated uniformly, thoroughly, and in a trauma-informed, victim-centered manner. The additions in House File 1042 will provide greater consistency across jurisdictions, eliminating confusion about investigative authority, and ensuring that military personnel, regardless of their branch or assignment, receive the same level of investigative integrity and due process. As stated, in preparation for this legislation, the Minnesota Sheriff's Association engaged key stakeholders, including representatives from the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs, and the Minnesota National Guard. Their input helped shape this bill to meet the needs of both the military as well as law enforcement, ensuring cases are handled with professionalism, consistency, and with the highest investigative standards. By passing House File 1042, we take an essential step forward in strengthening protections for victims, ensuring accountability, and reinforcing the integrity of the investigations involving military personnel. So on behalf of the Minnesota Sheriff's Association, we urge your support for this bill. I appreciate your time and attention to this important issue. Thank you, Chair Bliss and committee members, for your leadership and commitment to supporting those who serve and protecting those in need. And I'm happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you. And I understand that Lieutenant Colonel Eric Athman from the Department of Military Affairs is here to answer any questions from members. Are there any member questions for Chair Mueller or her testifier? Don't be shy. All right. Any closing comments, Chair?
It's a great bill, and just thank you so much for hearing it. Look forward to your support. Thank you.
I renew my motion that House File 1042 is recommended to be re-referred to the Public Safety Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Motion carries, and House File 1042 is referred to the Public Safety Committee. The next presentation we have is by the Department of Military Affairs and Veterans Affairs on the Governor's Budget. Recommendations contained in House File 2444. Note that we are not moving the bill at this time. First on the list to testify is the Department of Military Affairs General Mankey and Lieutenant Colonel Athman. Please come to the testifier table, state your name, and begin your presentation.
Good morning, Chair Bliss and representatives. I'm Major General Sean Mankey, the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard and the Commissioner of the Department of Military Affairs. So we're here today to talk about House File 2444 as introduced by Co-Chairs Bliss and Jiang. We fully support this bill. Next slide, please. Bottom line up front, we are asking, these are the numbers that we're asking for in state fiscal year 2026 and 2027. And I'll go into these in a little bit more detail in the next slides. The enlistment incentives provide state tuition reimbursement and state reenlistment bonuses and other tuition reimbursement bonuses. And we're asking for a $2 million increase for 2026 and a $6 million increase for 2027 to support state tuition reimbursement for costs incurred in state reenlistment bonuses. As well as the cyber coordination cell, we're requesting a $353,000 increase for state fiscal year 26 and $397,000 for state fiscal year 27. And then holistic health and fitness, requesting an increase in this as well, $800,000 for state fiscal year 2026. And we believe that we will be successful in receiving some federal funding to sustain this program for the Minnesota National Guard. Next slide, please. Incentives, like I said, state tuition reimbursement, state reenlistment bonus. So if someone is an infantryman today and they want to become a medic, sometimes we offer reenlistment bonuses to get them to pick up that skill set, help them make that decision, fill a gap that we may have. The state tuition reimbursement, this is something that continually goes up with the state tuition, but it's something that sets the Minnesota National Guard apart from its other reserve component reservists, where we offer state tuition reimbursement for them to go to higher education or trade school because, you know, they are citizen soldiers. They work here. They serve here both in the state level and the federal level, as well as a state reenlistment bonus, which has been a highly successful program. I have a little bit more detail on the next slide on this. And then medic recertification bonus. So it's the incentive to make sure that our medical technicians maintain their skill sets that are required so that they can continue to do their medical aid to our soldiers and airmen. Here's our state reenlistment bonus slide. Since we enacted this, it's been widely successful. So one of the biggest things, biggest cost for our soldiers and airmen is when they go to school. It costs the federal government a lot of money, and if we can hold on to well-trained soldiers, it makes everything better. They get more experience in the here. So these are the numbers of people that have signed either a 3, a 4, or a 6-year bonus. And because of the success of this program, we actually shut this program off the first of the year because we ran risk of potentially running out of money to sustain this program. Cyber Coordination Center, Cyber Coordination Cell. This slide highlights the efforts and success of the Cyber Coordination Cell, or C3. We notice a significant gap between the federal military resources available and their ability to perform domestic support in the cyber area if needed. So we stood up this program and partners with MNIT. And this program will continue to offer resources if needed at the state level, as well as continue to be the liaison between the federal entities and the state entities for cyber response and cyber needs if needed. Holistic health and fitness, simply, again, if we can keep soldiers in the military, soldiers and airmen in the military, if something happens, then rehabilitate them. We save the training values. We capitalize on their experience. And this is, no different when if you're an aviator and we spent a lot of money training you, but all of a sudden you're in a car accident, you might hurt your knee. Granted, you can get civilian help, but this also looks at some of the military requirements that are needed to get that soldier fit so that they can return to duty and continue to do their military occupational skill set. We believe that this program, we've been leading on this at the national level, and we believe that we will be able to secure some federal money beginning in 27. So we're asking for money to continue this program through state fiscal year 26. And pending your questions, that's all I have for you.
Representative Bjorn.
Jung or Bjorn?
Bjorn.
Olson? Oh, great.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's okay, sir. I was just, didn't know what I heard.
Yeah, sorry.
Thank you, Mr.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, gentlemen, for your brief here. My question is, why did we almost run out of money with the reenlistment money? And I think that as a state, we should never run out of reenlistment bonus money due to the fact that the cost of training a soldier, I'm not trying to pump up your egos, gentlemen, but a 2-star and a colonel and the other colonel that we have in this room, there's a lot of taxpayer dollars that were invested in your training, considerable sums of money. And paying $20,000, $30,000 to a soldier to keep them in for another 6 years and keep that wealth of knowledge is something that we should never get rid of and never run out of. So I'm just curious.
Are there any other questions for the... Oh, I'm sorry. General, did you want to answer that? It's a rough morning.
Go ahead, Eric. Mr. Chair, Representative Bliss, for the record, my name is Lieutenant Colonel Eric Athman, Director of Operations for the Department of Military Affairs. Representative Bliss, great question. Originally that program was really set up for state tuition reimbursement, right? That has been kind of the gold standard that we've had over a number of years, especially at the undergraduate level, but now at the graduate level to continue ed for service members. It's one of the benefits that we advertise day and night. We found that reenlistments are a difficult thing, right? The federal government really stops reenlisting soldiers or providing bonuses for reenlistments at the 12-year mark. So that leaves a significant gap for service members beyond the 12 to get to 20 or further service even beyond that. With the implementation of the blended retirement system, which is a new retirement system that is both a defined benefit and defined contribution plan, it's going to become even more difficult over time to retain service members because you can walk away at 6 or 12 years now. You won't have your defined benefit, but you had some defined contributions into the thrift savings plan over time. So think 401k. You can make it to 12 years and still have soldiers that say, hey, I've done enough. It's my time. We'll still give them a handshake on the way out. But the funds that we have here allow us to provide reenlistment benefits on the state side from the state legislature, which is a great thing for us. The bill that we have for funding provides us some funding flexibility, i.e. we can carry funds over from this biennium into the next biennium should we underspend. But we try to manage that pretty closely because we realize that that's a constraint that the legislature has for good timing and use of funds. But, you know, we can only offer what we're provided. So our appropriation resets every year to the base, which is $12.114 million, which is basically enough to cover state tuition reimbursement plus a little bit more. State tuition reimbursement on average year is around $11 million. So that just gives us about $1.5 million to work with, or less than $1.5 million. So it's up to the committee and up to the legislature to determine what amount above that $12.114 million is there for us to continue to offer those bonuses, the reclassification bonuses, and the medic certification training. So, Representative Olson, I hope that answers your question.
Representative Olson, follow up.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And I just want to reiterate the fact that I think the National Guard here in the state of Minnesota has done an even better, like the reserves, terrible when you're talking about reenlistment bonuses and stuff. I have not received a single dime after my initial contract scholarship. My buddies are all National Guardsmen, and they get their check in the mail and then laugh at me and tell me that I should have been a guardman. And I'm starting to believe them when they say this. So thank you for what you guys do.
Appreciate it.
Representative Olson, is there a time limit that you can move over to the Guard?
It becomes more narrow.
Are there any other questions for the testifiers? I do have one question myself on the H2F funding. You said that we're planning to pick some the federal up in the 2027. Does that mean the funding from the state goes away, or did that in addition to?
Sure. Go ahead. Okay. Chair Bliss, so being good stewards of taxpayer dollars, we believe that the federal program will kick on somewhere in federal fiscal year 27. So what we were asking the committee is to continue to fund state fiscal year 26 will allow us to continue to build the program, really maintain it over time. We're working with our federal counterparts right now to set up what we call a cooperative agreement, which is essentially we have state employees that carry out the mission of this program that are reimbursed by the federal government. Of the 380 employees within the Department of Military Affairs, about 350 of them are federally reimbursed in one way or another. This is a continuation of a very similar program, but as you can imagine, at the federal level, getting anything set up right now, they're not really sure what's going on week to week. So we're doing our best to continue to push that program forward. The federal government has announced that they're going to identify four pilot states to try funding H2F in continuum. We won't be aware of if we were selected as one of those states until later in this year. So really, this year, just asking Chair Bliss just for 1 year's worth of funding to really continue to try to press on to get some of that federal funding to come into the agency.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions? None? All right. Thank you for your presentation, Lieutenant Hoffman and General Mankey. I hope you can stick around for the next bill case if there are any questions. Next to present is the Department of Military Affairs. Commissioner Lindsay, please come to the testifier table with your testifiers. Have each testifier state their name for the record and begin.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm Brad Lindsay. I'm the commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Thank you for having me today.
Please begin.
Get our slides up.
Are they running or are we? Couldn't see who was running for the last team. Thank you. Good to go.
Got her? All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your patience. Next slide, please. So just an overview of our presentation today, threw in a few pictures. That's last year Veterans Day on the Hill, where our Commander's Task Force and the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers sponsored, and hoping for a fourth year of a Veterans Omnibus Bill. Next slide. So Minnesota has made historic investments serving Minnesota's veterans over the last 6 years. We've opened 3 new state veterans homes, 1 new state veterans cemetery. We have statutory authorization for another state veterans cemetery near Bemidji. The post 9/11 service bonus paid 26,077 veterans and survivors a bonus totaling $27.3 million. And we appropriated over $20 million to functionally end veterans homelessness in Minnesota. And that's our dedication of our Preston home, one of the 3 new homes. Through the collaboration of the legislature and the administration, the long-sought-after goal of opening 4 new facilities has come to fruition. Minnesota Veterans Homes are open in Bemidji, Montevideo, and Preston. Minnesota State Veterans Cemetery, Redwood Falls, is also open. Funding and support from the legislature helped the department support work that led to 5 additional continuums of care in Minnesota declaring a functional end to veterans homelessness. 4 had been declared previously. In July of 19, the declaration for Southeast. November 2020, the suburban metro area counties. November 21, the central COC. June 2022 was St. Louis County. And then the last one is October 24th. Of 24 in Hennepin County. We've actually, by our own numbers, have also now met the criteria for functional zero in Ramsey County, but with the changes in the federal government, we're now unsure of that process for verification. It is kind of up in the air with some changes to the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness, who has made that determination for the states and the continuums of care. So as of March 20th of 2025, 4,190 veterans have been housed off the Homeless Veteran Registry since it was created in 2014. Minnesota, like I said, is poised to become the 4th state in the country to have achieved functional zero for veterans experiencing homelessness. Next slide. This is our general fund base budgets, as they were for fiscal year 24 through 27. The programs and services operational base budget for 26-27 was reduced by nearly $500,000, and the Veteran Cemetery's starting base is down $1 million for the biennium. In fiscal year 24, there were one-time investments in the homeless initiatives and the post 9/11 service bonus, in addition to grants for nonprofits in 24-25, so that also is why the reductions. The Veterans Homes operational base budget for 26-27 was also reduced by nearly $15 million from the 25 base. Next. So our fiscal year 26-27 proposed change items include a 20.7% increase to the base budget for our healthcare division, requesting resources that gradually move towards fully staffing and filling the 3 new veterans homes. That's been a bit of a challenge with the situation with healthcare workers since COVID. Right now, we still have a total of about 150 or so positions, 145 actually, positions left to fill in those 3 new veterans homes before we can bring them up to a full census of veterans. Funds will allow for completion of that mission, avoiding, as I said, the empty beds and reductions in revenue and levels of service for veterans under our care. Funds also ensure the state requirements are met under federal funding agreements for the new veterans homes. All of the new veterans homes were partially funded by grants from the federal VA, and we have obligations under that to get those homes up to their full census and their full capacities of veterans. 2% increase was to the base budget for the Programs and Services Division. So we're requesting resources to both meet operating costs while working toward the goal of achieving functional zero statewide with homeless veterans, continuing the progress made towards veteran suicide prevention and other critical initiatives. Funding will prevent the state from going backwards, losing progress made during the most recent biennium as well as the last 6 years. Next, please. So to address the operating cost increases in the healthcare division, general fund requests include $7.93 million for fiscal year 26, $21.25 million for 27, and $25.68 million in each subsequent year. This will support continued operations of the 8 state veterans homes in Bemidji, Fergus Falls, Hastings, Laverne, Minneapolis, Montevideo, Preston, and Silver Bay. Also help cover expected growth in employee compensation and benefits and other operating costs, including a 10% increase in minute services in fiscal year 25 and an additional 12.5% in fiscal year 26-27. It'll also ensure that an additional $29 million in federal VA per diems, resident maintenance fees, and Medicare reimbursements will continue to be collected to support the operation of our veterans' homes in the 26-27 biennium. Programs and services. In order to maintain current services, we need to address the operating cost increase in that division. So the requests include $393,000 in fiscal year 26 and an increase of $796,000 in each subsequent year. Again, help to cover the expected growth in compensation and benefits and other operating costs, include those minute increases that I spoke about. Not funding the request would result in detrimental impact on operations that serve our veterans and their families and potential staff reductions. Next up, I won't belabor this point too much because it's been thoroughly belabored in other committee meetings, but we were required by MMB because there is a penalty attached to the claims predator bill that it'd be carried also in our budget bill. Next up. Another piece is we're requesting authority for a Gold Star and Blue Star Family Memorial Plaque authorization. We'd like to put a new memorial plaque in the Court of Honor located on the Capitol grounds out here, recognizing the sacrifices in Gold Star and Blue Star families. Funding for the design, development, solicitation, and eventual production of the plaque would be utilizing community contributions and existing MDVA resources. So no additional ask for that. Next. And then that is just our base budget summary, where we would be if given as we requested the increases. And lastly, just a change item summary. Again, $17.9 million in 26, $21 million in 27 for the homes, $393,000 and $796,000 for the Programs and Services Division. I'll make a note on that lowest piece, the Game and Fish. We asked for authorization or for DNR to provide reduced cost hunting and fishing license for disabled veterans. DNR is carrying the cost of that in their bill, and we're still working on the language and who will actually carry that. And with that, that is all I have, Mr. Chair, committee members, and we can stand for any questions. I have my budget genius in the back of the room if we have anything detailed as far as budget questions. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner, for being here. I just want to reiterate my desire for us to start really pushing into the soldier suicide, the veteran suicide area. I received a letter or a study that was done by MACV that said that a homeless veteran has 186% more chance of committing suicide. That is a serious problem. With that being said, our budget is currently about 1,000% more for homeless veterans as for soldier suicide. So there's a little imbalance, and I'd like to see us rectify that. And if there's anything, I'll say it again, if there's something that we can do to assist this, I know there was another representative who in a committee made a comment that there's where's your answer, and I'm sitting here saying I don't have an answer. We haven't had an answer for 20 years now. That's the problem. Mm-hmm. So if you can come up with more bullet point opportunities for us to get towards an answer to change that 20 to a day, that's what we really, really, really need to do, okay? And I don't think just throwing money at a nonprofit that raises their hand and says, hey, we're here, we can try. I don't think that's the answer necessarily. If there's something we can do to build this out, I desperately want us to do that. And then, Mr. Johnson, we remain absolutely committed to the conversation of this claim shark problem. We believe you 100% when you say that it's a problem. And we are committed to coming up with a solution that provides options to veterans while at the same time completely taking out the bad actors in this. So want to continue the conversation, want to absolutely get the job done on that, okay?
Chair Bliss, Representative Olson, thank you for that comment. I agree, and we'll continue to work it. Thank you.
Did you want to respond to the veteran suicide?
Sure, Chair Bliss, Representative Olson. I appreciate that very much. And, you know, I think I described a little bit last time, but it's been a little bit of the ramping up effort. You know, the older effort was the homeless piece, and we have been working on that for about 11 years altogether now. And during that process, we learned a lot of lessons and a lot of things that are directly applicable to the suicide prevention efforts, too. And a big piece of that is gathering everyone in that space, from nonprofits to the National Guard to the Reserve Forces, all of our veteran service organizations together, getting a lot of smart people together and coming up with ideas. And then there's going to be, just like there was with homelessness, trial and error, I think. We're going to try a few things, and they may not work, and we're going to have to adjust fire and try something else. So I think it's kind of a long-term solution, but we're in it for the long term, and we absolutely appreciate your support with that effort.
Representative Olson, follow-up.
No, thank you. I appreciate both of you and everyone being here today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any further questions? I have one. I was going to mention the suicide as well. It'd be nice to see some sort of plans, maybe in a supplement, lit maybe next year, just so we can work on it together so we're up to full speed before the next budget cycle. That would really be nice. The increase in your budget to the veterans' homes, I understand with the staffing, that's a big issue right now. And you also mentioned that once we get up to full staffing, it's going to help with the federal reimbursement. And I know the per diem rate is substantial in the planning for these. How is that going to affect the increase? Are we going to see an offset, or is it still? Are we still expected to carry this increase on future budgets?
I think, you know, this is a constrained budget that we're asking for. And I think what filling those beds and increasing those per diems. You know, we have plans as well. So just so you're aware, Mr. Chair, a veteran who is less than 70% service-connected disabled who comes into our home, we're reimbursed about $50,000 per year for that veteran's care from the federal VA per diems. For a veteran who is 70% or more, that number is $222,000 per year. Wow. So one of our efforts to help ourselves, if you will, is we've got our programs and services. We set up a special medical team of our claims representatives to go into all the homes and to make sure they're maximizing the benefits of every veteran in there. You know, the PACT Act was huge in opening up more benefits. You know, a lot of our veterans in the homes are Vietnam era. And so many of the PACT Act things are those things that are the results of toxic exposures. And so there's a lot of veterans there who have the opportunity for an increase or to be recognized for diseases or illnesses they didn't have before. And that alone is going to help us with our numbers going forward. I will say just over the first two quarters of this fiscal year, with filling the beds that we have filled in the three new homes and the work we're doing with our claims office to increase those per diems for our veterans, we've went up about 33% in our revenues. So that's our plan, is that we, you know, we have a shovel and we can kind of dig ourselves out of this to some degree.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
I believe there's no more questions. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Committee members, appreciate it.
Hold on. Hope someone from the MDVA will stick around and help with the next bill. And the next bill we have is, or we're going to hear from Christy Janigo on behalf of the Commander's Task Force to talk about the request for an appropriation to address food insecurity. I will note this request is contained in a bill that was introduced on Monday as House File 2773, which is authored by Representative Clardy. Ms. Janigo, please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'm Dr. Christy Janigo. I'm the American Legion Department of Minnesota Legislative Chair and the Legislative Chair for the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers. Thanks for taking the time to preview this bill. This does have funding attached to it, so I'm grateful that you're able to hear from us today about it. So this is one of the top five priorities of the Commander's Task Force. They really believe that geography shouldn't influence whether or not a veteran goes hungry. I should preface this by saying that there was an amendment to the Senate Companion, SF-1893, to remove direct appropriation and to align it with how funding's appropriated to the CORE program, which MDVA is the grant-making agency. But this is a CTF bill and not an agency bill, just to clarify. So food insecurity is a growing problem among Minnesota veterans, and state lawmakers took a big bite out of that last biennium by funding $540,000 a year to Metro Meals on Wheels, and that has targeted Hennepin, Ramsey, and Anoka County. I personally can attest to having done applications for formerly homeless veterans or veterans who desperately needed meal support. So it has worked very well in the metro area, and we just want to say that we heard Senators Howe and Barr loud and clear last year with their concerns about us not taking care of rural veterans. So that was kind of the impetus of this bill, so we really appreciate them speaking up for our 84 mid-sized rural and smaller counties. That's why this bill proposes $500,000 per year in funding as an increase to the LSS CORE program, which stands for Casework, Outreach, Referral, and Education. And they have the infrastructure in place ready to scale up to meet the needs. So I just want to share a few more facts about food insecurity in veterans. In 2023, 12 to 14% of U.S. veterans were found to be food insecure. And 1 in 4 of food insecure veterans were under the age of 65. And that's why this is so important, because we're able to now help younger veterans who aren't traditionally in that senior category who would be recipients of Meals on Wheels programs. Something important to me, 20 to 28% were female veterans who were food insecure. And 35% were veterans experiencing serious mental health challenges. And almost half of food insecure veterans were or are experiencing homelessness. The way rising food prices during the pandemic really affected the general population, it really hit the veterans community hard. And after COVID-19, food insecurity among veterans rose by about 40%. And specifically in Minnesota, according to LSS, more than 1 in 5 adults living in rural Minnesota with food insecurity are veterans. So there are multiple issues that make food insecurity among veterans even more challenging. One is we don't like to ask for help. That's just a simple fact. There is a stigma and shame surrounding this, especially in really small communities where everyone knows everyone. You show up at the local food shelf and now it's the talk of the town, right? So that's been a big barrier. Also, veterans do experience, as you know, physical disabilities that make mobility really challenging. And in rural areas where services are far flung, it can be really tough to get there. The other thing is many veterans aren't really always aware of all the resources available to them. So that can be a challenge as well, and we feel that the word needs to be disseminated in a comprehensive manner so veterans know where to go for help. Finally, the food insecurity resources that have traditionally been available to folks are not healthy options. And if you look at information about what VA medical centers and CBOCs are dealing with, oftentimes these health problems are caused by an unhealthy diet. So we see a lot of compounded by whatever they faced during service that made these health issues worse. So we see a lot of diabetes type 2, hypertension, and various other conditions that, you know, if you're using food shelf food, it's often high in carbs, high in sugars, and that can make things much worse. And it does drive a tremendous cost to treat these conditions. So a little bit more about the CORE program, the existing infrastructure. They have meals available at community dining centers, home-delivered meals, food vendor services, diners clubs where you can get a meal at the local restaurant, oftentimes the only restaurant in town, meals to go, and frozen meals shipped right to their door. So they have a long history of operating in rural and outstate Minnesota. They are trusted among the veterans community and also among those who would refer. So county veteran service officers often would fill out the CORE referral. The other thing we really like about this is that we think it's a way in to get veterans other services. So first connect them with the meals, and then hopefully they can access other services like mental health, caregiver support and respite care, financial counseling, homeless supports, and other peer supports. So that's an overview of this bill. We hope to be able to talk with you more formally about this in a future meeting.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to Representative Clardy for having this. We were really excited when I saw the way that you had designed it this year as opposed to years prior. The Meals on Wheels program is a very honorable program, but my fear with that, and I believe I spoke to it last year, was that it was going to not be used to expand veteran services, but that it was going to become a way of replacing it. And in this organization, I believe that we should always be doing more for the veterans, not finding a way to take our money and then alleviate other burdens. So my fear was that veterans who were already qualified for Meals on Wheels were not going to get those services, but instead we're going to take this money and we're going to use that to serve veterans. In this instance, veterans who still qualify for the Meals on Wheels are going to get that fund, while at the same time those who are getting this service are going to do that as well. So you're not supplanting funds, you are really reinforcing the funds on this, and I appreciate the way that it's written. I think it's wonderful, and so thank you for bringing it.
Yes, Chair Bliss, I would be happy to, but I think a better person to answer this question might be a representative from Lutheran Social Services who's right here, if you're able to respond to that.
Hi, my name is Erin Sutton. I'm the Senior Director of Advocacy at Lutheran Social Service of Minnesota. And unfortunately, I don't have the details of that. That would be best answered by our Senior Director of LSS Meals, and she would be happy to be here when the bill is heard, and she could provide those details.
That would be wonderful. Thank you. Any further questions? Mr. Johnson, could you just kind of go into a little bit more detail on the history and what CORE actually does, like a little bit more?
Certainly. Chair Bliss, this one is CORE. We do have a SOAR program as well. That's the Social Security Disability Team. Thank you for the question. We have had an extremely successful relationship with Lutheran Social Services to provide these additional resources to veterans and their families as they need assistance. Primarily for us, the intake comes through our County Veteran Service Offices, where veterans are applying for additional resources through the State Soldiers Assistance Program. And the resources that LSS CORE offers throughout the state of Minnesota include but are not limited to things like mental health and chemical dependency counseling, financial counseling, where if we're offering veterans grants to help alleviate some of their financial concerns, one of the things that we offer them as well is work with Lutheran Social Services to have some financial counseling happening so that it is a maintained and sustainable resource to them. Let's help you understand how to budget your needs. And I would say that in addition to those
those particular issues, the core program, it's case management and outreach. So it is utilizing state resources to more broadly serve the entire state of Minnesota. We've been able to fairly successfully limit the number of additional FTEs in the agency by utilizing these resources to support the operations throughout the state of Minnesota. So it's, and it is, again, it is a request for proposal that happens about every 5 years. So we put it out and say to any organizations in the state of Minnesota, can you meet these criteria, these needs? So it is competitive and it is a demonstrable, it is demonstrable to us in the RFP process that, again, Lutheran Social Services has been able to meet all the criteria and has been successful in returning the benefits from the state of Minnesota out to these communities.
Thank you. Seeing no further questions, thank you, Ms. Yandel.
Thank you.
The next bill on our agenda is House File 2038. Vice Chair Olson, please come to the set prior to it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good morning, Mr. Chair,
Vice Chair Olson, would you like to move House File 2338 before the division?
I would so do that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Vice Chair Olson, please begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 2338 is maybe not the solution, but it's moving towards a solution to a problem that has come to light over the last couple of years. Now, for those of you who don't know, as a reserve soldier, every day that I put on a uniform is a day that I not only get paid, but I also receive what's called a retirement point. And that retirement point adds up. And after 20 years of service, I basically can look at how many points I have, and that determines how much of a pension would be received after I complete the 20-year pension. I can go further than that if I continue to qualify as a soldier, all that kind of stuff. But basically, you look at how many retirement points you have, and that equates into dollars at the end when I turn 60 years old. Then there'll be a check in the mail for my service every month. And so there's real dollars behind the service that I do as a reservist. Not only do I make money now, but I will make money in the future. Now, one thing that I found was when my really good friends that I have, they were all called to state active duty in 2020 and 2021 when there was significant amounts of time. I mean, we spent 100,000 duty days in 2020 and 2021. That means that there were 100,000 soldiers who worked for at least one day, right? Or you had, in one of my friends' case, he was called up three times during that period. And so he spent a lot of time. And he's a professional. He makes a lot of money outside of the military, and he took a pay loss as a result of his state active duty time. And he didn't want to come and testify because he said, I was happy to do it, and I don't want the colonel looking at me or the two-star general seeing who I am and saying that anything bad, right? He was happy to do it, and he told me that. But I think that he should have been compensated in some form of a retirement point in the future as well. And I was talking with the general, and we were discussing what would it take to purchase a point from the federal government, and we're not there yet. The conversation continues to be had. I talked to Mr. Kerr, and he told me that there's conversations in Washington about how a state can pay for a retirement point for a soldier, but right now that conversation's not finished yet, and we don't have an answer to it. And so House File 2338 would provide some form of compensation to any soldier who's activated during a state active duty purpose, and it would provide a 5% pay bonus. And 5% is not a whole lot. If you're talking about a private, an E1, E2, or an E3, you're talking $25 extra. If you're talking about a two-star general, you're talking about a little bit more. So General Menke would get a little bit more, but he's already active all the time. So that's a different story. But 5%, it's not a whole lot. The fiscal note, which originally came out, was quite alarming, but now is not at all alarming. It's about $2,000 is what we see. Now, understand that in 2020 and 2021, that cost would be significantly more because there was 100,000 duty days. But that was hopefully, Lord willing, that was something that only occurs every 100 or more years, and we don't have to worry about something like that ever happening again in the state of Minnesota. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would stand for any questions.
Thank you. And Lieutenant Colonel Eric Othman from the Department of Military Affairs is here to answer questions from members. Did you have any comments?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Lieutenant Colonel Eric Othman, Director of the Department of Military Affairs. I appreciate Representative Olson, Vice Co-Chair Olson, bringing the bill forward. It's a legislative initiative that really does make sense. We've made incredible strides across the last 10 years or so trying to create some parity between what we call state active duty or state active service and federal service, so matching whether it's base pay, BAH, BAS, which is allowance for housing, allowance for subsistence, and reimbursements, really trying to bring parity with those. And this is one of the last things that we just haven't really addressed yet. Representative Olson talked about our initiatives at the federal level. We'll continue to try to press to get some language into the NDAA to allow us to buy those retirement points, which long-term I think is the best solution. And the language, the way Representative Olson has it written right now, is great because it allows us to do the 5% pension offset up until such a time where we determine that we're able to buy those points, and then essentially this just remains on the books should that ever disappear. Looking at the fiscal note, like Representative Olson said, $2,000 a year, we kind of took the averages from the last few years of our true state active duty events. And you'll see this on the top of the third page of the fiscal note, but it really kind of defines what those events are. So think forest fire, think flood, think winter storm response. Those are our more traditional National Guard uses for state active duty. And the cost, I don't want to say it's insignificant, but it is a significant thank you to the individual member, since we aren't at this time able to provide them any type of a pension. As you can think, you know, we talked about some of the use cases where there's somebody that's on for quite a number of days. Historically, you may serve and support one state active duty event in your entire career. So you may have 10 days of state active service supporting a flood event, and that those 10 days don't really give us enough latitude or funding to set up a defined benefit or defined contribution plan with MSRS. And really, it's kind of an afterthought from the DOD because it really wasn't their problem to help solve. But we'll continue to work with them, and we support the bill as written by Representative Olson.
Thank you. Are there any questions? And I don't have any either. So thank you very much for your testimony. Representative Olson, your closing remarks.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the committee. This is something that will just add a little taste when a soldier sees their pay stub and they see that it says, hey, the state of Minnesota cares about you just a little bit more. That's a huge thing for recruitment and retention. It's not going to be a significant cost whatsoever, but it would have been a significant thing for a lot of the soldiers who have had their state active duty time increase in the last couple of years, and I know that they would have appreciated having that. And so it's a great thing that we're doing today to ensure that our soldiers are treated the same as every other soldier. The best part about the National Guard in the state of Minnesota is they walk around wearing that uniform, and they are as good, if not better, than most soldiers in this country, and that includes active duty soldiers. And I will stake my hat on that claim. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll renew my motion for this bill.
All right, I will lay over House File 2338 for possible inclusion in the division omnibus. Last bill on the agenda is House 2410. That's my bill. Vice Chair Olson, will you take the gavel?
All right, Mr. Chair, would you like to move House File 2410 before the division?
I would.
I see you have an amendment coded A1. Would you please explain your amendment?
The amendment just kind of clarifies things. I believe it helps line things up with the federal laws a little bit better. It's rather simple.
Perfect. Any questions on the amendment? All those in favor of adopting the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. The A1 is adopted. Chair Bliss, your bill is before us as amended. Please begin your testimony.
House File 2410 provides a surviving spouse of a veteran killed in the line of duty that they can maintain their education benefits if they remarry. Currently, if the widowed spouse of a service member is receiving educational benefits through the Minnesota Veterans Assistance Program or the Minnesota GI Bill, they lose these benefits if they remarry. These education benefits can provide life-enhancing opportunity to a surviving spouse, especially if they're those with children after suffering such a significant loss as such service to our nation. These spouses should not be forced to decide between getting remarried and being able to continue their college education. This is an earned benefit to our service members and their families, and remarriage should not be a reason for taking the benefit away. I've got a lot of notes here, but I think I'll just pass it over to my testifier, and if there's any questions.
Please state your name for the record and continue with your testimony.
Thank you. Chair and members, my name is Leah Patton. I'm the executive director of the Joint Religious Legislative Coalition. So our coalition is formed of four different religious community groups in the state. So the Islamic Center of Minnesota, the Minnesota Catholic Conference, the Jewish Community Relations Council of Minnesota and the Dakotas, and the Minnesota Council of Churches. So as people of faith, those four groups get together, decide on what we can agree on based on our faith's values, and then we come to the Capitol and advocate based on those things to all of you. So our primary mission as an organization or missions are to address poverty, uphold the dignity of previously overlooked communities, and mitigate societal harm. So just a little bit of background as to how we landed on this particular bill. Over the last year or so, we've been partnering with the University of St. Thomas Law School to identify areas in state statute where people's benefits are impacted if they choose to get legally married. So as a organization based on religious values, we believe that marriage is one of the most sacred commitments that you can make to someone. But just based on statistical realities and data that has come out over the years, legal marriage does propose a economic opportunity for families if they choose to do that. So it results in better outcomes for individuals that are in that marriage and for children in the home as well, which makes sense if you think about it. There's pooled time, pooled financial resources, pooled emotional resources that just result in better outcomes in the long term. So if people choose to do that, we want to make sure that there aren't financial disincentives or financial realities in losing their government benefits, especially an earned benefit in this case, to that couple deciding to get married if they want to. So we, specific to this bill, we don't believe that spouses should be forced to choose to continue their college education, particularly if there's children in that home. That is would also result in a better economic benefit. Potentially, if you're going back to school, you want to make sure you have a better financial situation for your family, and between doing that and getting remarried. So we thought this would be a good bill to kind of start our longer-term mission on addressing those areas in state statute, and we want to thank Chair Bliss for agreeing to carry this for us. So.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there any other testimony? Mr. Johnson, do you want to speak to the department's position on this, or do you have one or not?
Chair Olson, members, again, for the record, Ben Johnson, Deputy Commissioner of Programs and Services for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. I think the agency is definitely supportive of any bill that would continue to support the sacrifices of a family who's lost a loved one in service. The fiscal note associated with this is very minimal. I think we're looking at about $8,000. It's something that we can definitely work with. The only concern that we've ever had with it is the slippery slope of expanding benefits for individuals that would not be supported by federal law. So I think some of the amendments are useful, and we appreciate the meetings that we've had.
Thank you for your testimony. Chair Bliss, do you have any other comments on the bill?
Yeah, I do. The Minnesota Veterans Assistance Program just provides a one-time grant of $750. It's a last-in amount. You have to use all of your grants, your other money you might be getting before any of this money kicks in. So it is a minimal amount, and I believe the department said they would just absorb it. Is that correct? So it's that's always nice. I appreciate your support. Thank you.
And with that, the chair renews his motion. House File 2410, as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion in a division omnibus bill. Members, the next meeting of the House Veterans and Military Affairs Division will be Wednesday, April 2nd, 2025 at 8:15 a.m. My favorite part about the chair having his bill heard last is that I get to adjourn the meeting. Meeting is adjourned.